Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Catholics in the Twin Cities are going through a trauma over the past year that many parishes and dioceses have experienced keenly over the last two decades. The sex abuse scandal that has shocked the church all the way to the Vatican seems to be reaching a crisis in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Calls are mounting for the resignation of Twin Cities Archbishop John Neinstedt for covering up abuse and for creating a myth that the Twin Cities was some positive example of aggressive action and openness regarding accusations of priest abuse when the truth was the opposite. Our partner, the New York Times, said last week the current leadership of the archdiocese makes, quote, a mockery of accountability, and the position of Archbishop Neinstedt has been further undermined by a year-long investigation by Madeline Barron, a reporter for our friends at Minnesota Public Radio.
It's really rocked Catholics here. It started in the fall of last year, and people were just really alarmed, saddened, and disturbed, especially because they had been told for years that this archdiocese was the national leader on this issue. So they thought, yeah, we've seen these scandals elsewhere, but here, everything's fine. Even during the time of the Boston Globe scandal in 2002, the bishop here, the Archbishop of the Twin Cities, Archbishop Harry Flynn, was one of the leaders in the church's efforts to respond to that scandal.
Let's talk about Flynn for a moment. Your investigation goes back to Louisiana and really tells a long story of abuse and cover-ups and a language of reassurance. Flynn's idea of saying, hey, we're a leader here, really comes from a long experience of almost using sexual abuse as a kind of, hey, we have the expertise here. We know what we're doing. We can actually cure this. He actually had a strategy or comes from a parish where that was the norm.
Well, yeah, so he was made a bishop to go down to Cajun country, to the Diocese of Lafayette, Louisiana in the 80s when there was the first national clergy abuse scandal. And the church was in crisis. They saw this was going to go horribly for them. There was a priest that had been caught abusing hundreds of boys. And so Flynn was sent down there to fix it. And then he started telling these stories over the years about how he healed the diocese and how he met with all these victims, and it was this great healing moment. And then he used those claims to really advance his career. So he gets promoted. He becomes the archbishop here. He becomes the head of the committee that drafts the church's landmark policy on abuse during the Boston Globe scandal in 2002. And it all comes from this story about what happened in this very rural community, isolated areas. And what we found was that he did not heal the diocese. And in fact, he was not meeting with all the victims. And some of the victims we talked to said that meeting with him was actually so painful. One father told me that Flynn told him privately, look, I agree the church mishandled this, but I can't say that publicly because I'm here to protect the church.
Let's listen to the language of Archbishop Flynn, because really what he does here is talk both as a spiritual counselor and as a kind of a psychologist. Here he is speaking back in 2003.
The bishop cannot look at this situation only with the eyes of the priest. With psychological and spiritual empathy, he must look at the pain confronting him as much as he possibly can with the eyes of the victim.
What did the people of the Twin Cities discover was going on based on your investigation?
So we found that abusers were kept in ministry, which is probably the biggest claim because that has been over and over again, both here and nationally, the thing that the church said they would no longer do. So we found abusers in ministry through last year. We also found that Flynn had written these secret agreements with some of these abusers. So these were legally binding. They appear to be legally binding agreements that say things like, I'm going to classify you as medically disabled because of your sexual abuse of children. You're going to agree to do everything in your power to prevent you from being identified as a priest, and I'll agree not to defame you. Sometimes those involved extra payments. I found one abuser living in a lake home, getting an extra about $1,000 a month on top of his pension, and, you know, that these victims had really been shut out.
What was it like to confront these former priests who were off, you know, spending these pensions?
Well, that was fascinating because I think there's the assumption of, oh, well, those priests would never talk to you. But actually, they do. And it's interesting to talk to them because you can get a sense of how they feel about the abuse. And in a bunch of these cases, you know, the church had not treated it like the end of the world. And when you talk to these priests about it, they say, well, you know, I've moved on from that. I don't really think about that anymore. You know, it's like they, too, just don't think that it was that big of a deal. And, you know, one of the most important pieces of information actually came from one of these priests who was one of the priests who has a lake home. And I stopped by and he was driving around on his lawnmower. He gets off the lawnmower, like runs up this hill, claims then to be on medical disability because he can't walk without assistance, and says, you know, and I say, does anyone come by from the church to monitor you? Because this was one of their big claims. We're carefully monitoring all the our abusive priests. He said, oh, you know, maybe once a month I meet with someone, talk about the news. That's about it.
And what is the current archbishop's role in all of this, as your investigation has found?
So what's interesting about Archbishop Neinstedt is that he did have the opportunity to make some different decisions. So when he came in, he's the one who hired this whistleblower, Jennifer Hasselberger, and gave her access to all these secret files. And then she starts warning him almost from her first day on the job. This is in 2008. And he just doesn't, he just ignores her warning. Sometimes he disagrees. He doesn't follow her advice. And the unraveling just continues because she's just so consistent in documenting all these problems, bringing them to his attention, thinking he'll do something. He doesn't. And finally, she's so frustrated that she resigns last year.
I absolutely believe that we have priests in our parishes currently who have either committed acts of sexual abuse against a minor or who we have more than adequate reason to believe are capable of doing so.
Wow. What can Pope Francis do at this point, and what do parishioners want the Vatican to do to deal with this going forward?
Well, Pope Francis is the only one who can order Neinstedt to resign or can remove Neinstedt as the Archbishop of the Twin Cities. So even if Neinstedt were to submit his resignation, Pope Francis would have to decide whether to accept it. So despite all this public pressure locally, ultimately it's not up to anybody locally as to what to do. And people are also really looking at Pope Francis, not just in this case, but in a couple other cases involving bishops in abuse cases in the U.S. to see what he will be doing. Given his public statements about holding bishops accountable, will he choose to make an example of some of these bishops? And so that's really what people are looking for.
Madeline Barron is a reporter for Minnesota Public Radio. Our thanks to Madeline and NPR, who spent a year reporting this story.